Welcome to the New York Times podcast, back for 2018, except for the one we recorded in 2017, which was last week. It's your hot sauce on my chicken of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Like Acid House? I know you do. That is Chicago House legend Justin Timberlake with his new single, Filthy. Wobble, wobble.
Clean version?
The clean version.
I don't know. Whatever's
there's only one version. I think that's the joke.
There's definitely
He says this ain't the clean version, but I think there's dirty version.
I didn't know he was singing in English. So, okay, a couple things before we get into the specifics of this week's podcast, which only tangentially has to do with Justin Timberlake. One, I wanna let people know that coming very soon is the Ashley Simpson podcast.
I gotta start studying up. I wanna rewatch the show.
You wanna have a viewing party?
Maybe. Yeah.
All right, maybe we'll do a binge this weekend. So the Ashley Simpson podcast is coming, and I know we have some questions already at the email. podcast@nytimes.com, but I also know that I did the last call for questions at the end of the jazz episode, so I fully freely acknowledge that some people might not have survived an hour of conversation about jazz, only to be reminded, and that's no knock on jazz, hashtag jazz, but I'm telling you right now at the top of the podcast, I would like questions for the Ashley Simpson podcast coming soon. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Share your feelings. Give us things to reference, songs to talk about, moments on the show that are very important.
Yes, we know she's related to Diana Ross.
Yes.
Through marriage.
Yes.
Bronx, that will come up.
Do you think there are cool photos of Bronx Mowgli that we have not seen?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. So like we're
Instagram
open.
Fan accounts.
Yeah. Like we're definitely like Finstas, like whatever it is, like we're here for all of it. So drop us an email. That will be soon. This week, I want to talk about something that actually maybe could resurrect the career of Ashley Simpson is the long tail of streaming, the longest rat tail of streaming. I feel like in 2017, we had a couple of podcast episodes where we kind of talked about streaming and its impact on the Billboard charts and on consumption patterns. And also in the case of SoundCloud, how it ends up birthing scenes and aesthetics and communities. But I was inspired to bring back the subject because of a piece by one of our guests. I am joined today by three people. First, the inspiration. That's Liz Pelly. Hey, Liz.
Hey.
Liz is a writer and editor who writes about music and culture and things of that nature, who has a piece in The Baffler not that long ago called The Problem with Muzak. And it is about basically the deadening effect of Spotify. I would assume on taste, on ears, on artists' bank accounts, on many, 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 many spaces. So we're going to talk about that. And to join me and Liz, I've got David Turner, who is the senior staff writer at Track Record.
Hello.
And I've got Joe Coscarelli, who's looking, he's got like a half turtleneck situation, like kind of a thing happening. Yeah. I'm into it.
Thanks.
Yeah, is that from Assembly?
Acne.
All right. Yeah. I'm into it. So Joe Coscarelli is pop music reporter of the New York Times out here swagging.
Thanks, John.
You're very welcome. Everybody here loves an algorithm. Not really. I thought it was important before we really get into some of the subjects that Liz talks about in her piece. And David also has a newsletter called Penny Fractions. It's a tiny letter called Penny Fractions, or a penny letter called Tiny Fractions. That's actually my crypto newsletter. It's a right. Totally different thing. Which you can subscribe to at idontknowwhatatinyletter.com URL.
It will be tinyletter/pennyfractions. That is all.
Great. So get on that. David's out here dropping raw, unfiltered thoughts in your inbox.
I learned a lot from this newsletter.
So, yes, I think we all have. Mm-hmm. But I want to set the stage, and I think we should all be transparent. And I will start, because 2018 is a bold new time. I want to remake myself, and full transparency is part of that. I want to talk about how we actually use streaming. And by streaming, I know, Liz, your piece is primarily about Spotify, but I'm talking about the whole ecosystem. I'm talking about Tidal, I guess, Apple Music, Bandcamp, and SoundCloud. So I'll start. I'm old. I don't stream. If I can at all help it, I generally don't stream. I feel like I use Spotify in a very targeted way. Like, I need to hear a particular song, and I happen to have Spotify open, and I can find it immediately.
Well, search isn't great.
It's so not great.
You can't find it immediately. No, this is depending on what you type in.
Totally fair point. You dig. I might find a themed playlist right. That's, like, adjacent to a word in the title.
You'll click around until you find
something. Maybe get it. Obviously, I feel like YouTube is a lot more lawless, and you're going to do better on YouTube, generally speaking, for that kind of thing. I use Spotify in that way. I feel like I use... organically, I probably use SoundCloud the most organically in the sort of clicking around and seeing what follows something else.
Discovery,
kind of energy.
Maybe.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's what they want. That's what they want us to call it.
Okay. I don't know. When I talked to the people at SoundCloud, I don't think they knew what it was. But okay. So Bandcamp I use in a very only in like the most kind of like I know this person has a release and I will go to that page. But I very rarely get lost in Bandcamp. I don't know if it's design or at least its user interface is not for my user. It's not for me. Tidal I canceled. I only have it for event releases. And then I cancel my subscription. And Apple Music, I just pay $100 a year for just because.
Just to have.
I don't know that I guess maybe I listen to Frank Ocean's radio show. Can you get that without paying the $100
a year?
No,
you can't. You need to pay for that. For
Beats. Okay, so...
Yeah, you need to pay for Beats.
Okay, fine. So I pay $100 for Frank Ocean's radio show. And I guess the OVO show. Is that still happening?
Which is on break.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Pause, but it'll come back.
It'll come back, right. But it's like not good happening. Shows. Yeah, yeah. Those are the first like 20 episodes of the OVO show. Like super good. Frank Ocean's show is very good. So I guess, okay, I pay $100 a year for that premium content. I don't stream. Send me a download. Send me a...
To be fair, you're also a music critic, so you get a lot of music sent to you.
That is accurate.
Physical copy, streams, downloads. That's
anyone who has been to my home, current or past, knows I receive a lot of physical copies of media.
Still.
There's no shortage of physical media, Shea Caramonica. I apologize to anyone who's ever had to witness it.
Or date you.
Yes. True story. It's a blanket apology. Joe.
I'm an Apple Music subscriber.
Congratulations.
Is that
more like a hi Joe? Is like a confession? Right. It's like a Apple subscriber.
I'm a happy Apple Music subscriber. I use it because it's on my phone. I find the interface to be the easiest to use. I also still download MP3s both legally through in free releases through work, stuff that's sent to me. Mm-hmm. And I pirate some
digital
music.
Dripped. Where's my digital dripped guys?
So I find Apple Music to be the best at being able to weave my MP3s with my music that I just have.
Right,
because
that's an important right. If you are navigating both of those things, yes, that's an important thing. Spotify is not particularly good at that.
No, so like I can take a DatPiff mixtape and put it into the same music where my Apple Music is.
RIP DatPiff. Not that it's gone away, it's just not very good.
But I only use that when I'm on the move, if I'm aux cording, if I'm plugging my phone
that's
in
right.
somewhere.
Anyone who's been to a Joe Coscarelli party knows.
Yeah,
the seamless mix of streaming and MP3s right. is just unparalleled.
Exactly. At work, I listen to music on YouTube mostly, and at home on my couch, I also listen to music on YouTube mostly because I still love music videos.
And do you let it just play? Do you let it just go?
Sometimes there are channels that I follow. Spend a lot of time on World Star Hip Hop, YouTube page, various pages like that.
Shout to that boy Astari. You know what it is.
I use Spotify only at work to
SponCon. Do Spon.
Yeah, do a little SponCon. No, for the same thing that you're saying, like targeted, or on Fridays, I go to New Music Friday, I listen through that, right. I check Rap Caviar because I want to see, what's being promoted and what's being surfaced.
It is worth saying for New Music Friday, this is a very strange Friday.
Yeah.
The fifth song is by an artist I've never heard of, Solima. Hmm. Are you up on that?
I bet you Salima is signed to a major label.
I will bet that too. much like some of the singers on the four. Still waiting for my investigative journalists out here.
If you click the name of the album and you look down at the really small font and you Google what that is, you maybe can find out what album it's on. What label it's on.
Okay, well, let's listen to a little Salima. And it's a song called A little song called Low Life.
Take me downtown where the dreams are bigger. Got change for one round. No need to hold your liquor. With our best behavior, 'cause they already call us failures. Lost yet found now. Let's not care about figures. Maybe we grew up on the wrong street, with the wrong name, with a different future. Blinded by the sound of the concrete that we can't tame. Keep moving closer. Tell me what you wanna do.
Spotify core.
Yeah.
Classic Spotify core.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that was Low Life by Salima, which none of us had ever heard previously.
No.
But is definitely, as Joe just said, super Spotify core.
Yep.
What does that mean? Because, you know, I hear people describe music as, it sounds like a Spotify artist.
Oh, we're all about that.
Yeah, to me it's
But can I tell you what label it's on?
Yes.
Parlophone Music Denmark, a division of Warner Music Denmark.
Definitely.
So I guess this is hitting in Copenhagen. Right? Some Copenhagen playlists really bump this up to
A Spotify core, which I think we've described our theory of on the podcast before, but it's like vaguely electronic, usually female vocals, like glitchy effects.
Slow galloping BPM, like sort of like dance music alluding, but not actual dance music.
I think like Ciara's Gold, which was a sleeper hit, is like the Spotify core.
I'm going to say Dua Lipa in 2017 with the Spotify core artist of the year, probably.
Yeah.
New rules.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Although, like, a little too polished. Like
more dance, more radio, but yes.
But we'll get to that because I do think this Spotify core thing gets at something in your article, which is sort of like almost the manifesting of new subgenres to kind of satisfy a pre-existing idea of what a playlist should be.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. So, and Bandcamp and SoundCloud, you know, I sort of poke around a lot to discover stuff and click around and sometimes let it play through and then usually get annoyed by something that comes on and then I move on.
Also, I forgot to mention that this afternoon when I was washing dishes, I did something which I don't do a lot, which I like to do, which is I just let YouTube go while I was scrubbing.
Yeah, and you can end up in some...
Yeah, no, so I went through a pretty good run of lock songs where they were in the dissing 50 Cent period, so that was super fun. So that was great. Anyway, Liz Pelly, very different.
Stream?
I have a feeling you're going to have a very different answer.
Yeah, well, in terms of what I listen to for streaming or just music in general, you know, I have an enormous cassette collection and people will probably, someone listening will probably be laughing, like making fun of that
don't
response.
Laugh.
But like,
cop a cassette.
A huge, you know, tape collection, some, and also like a good number of records and enjoy listening to music in that way the most. Physical releases.
A number one record store in America, Urban Outfitters.
Yeah.
I just caught the Wild Sam Hunt 7-inch from Urban Outfitters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Body Like a Back Road?
No, it was live from the 13 for 30 tour.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, go cop that.
I prefer the merch table at the
conceptual
show.
Well, at the Sam Hunt show, to be fair, what was at the merch table were $25 socks.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, if there was a 7-inch, I would have bought it.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely try to listen to, or end up listening to music very often, tapes and records. But I do have a Spotify account, which I use all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had a Spotify account.
Do you use it mostly
account.
For work, like work?
Exactly. I mean, I've had a Spotify account for a really long time, and I feel like I've used it more than ever over the last year since I've started researching Spotify and writing about it. It seems important to understand how it actually works or like what your average Spotify user is experiencing. So I look at the browse page all the time, look at playlists all the time.
Do you make your own playlists?
I don't really. I have one playlist that I refer to sometimes. It's called My Muzak and it's songs that I like. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I listen to, you know, I do listen to a bunch of playlists.
So you do listen. You don't just look. You do listen.
I listen to playlists mm-hmm. on it and stuff. But, you know, if someone looked at what I recently listened to, they'd probably be really confused yep. because, you know, I'll, like, listen to the most popular playlist in each genre category or something like that.
Personal yeah. taste.
Just, like, you're to reporting. Understand.
Right.
Yeah. So I listen to Spotify a lot, but I also use Bandcamp a lot.
Sure.
I download music on Bandcamp a lot. Bought my sister a Bandcamp gift card for Christmas.
Bandcamp gift cards?
They have Bandcamp gift cards. Yeah. And I don't know.
Now I know what everybody didn't get me for Christmas or Hanukkah.
I actually, you know, I think that Bandcamp is an interesting way to discover music. Mm-hmm. Like, once you buy something from someone, you'll get emails when they put new stuff up. You follow people on Bandcamp, you'll get emails when they buy stuff. I find myself often with 10 tabs in a row of just Bandcamp accounts or mm-hmm. Bandcamp pages. Also, the recommendations. Artists, like, have recommendations to others to listen to.
Right.
And then I also, 2017, became a paying member of Resonate, the streaming music cooperative based in Berlin.
I don't know very much about that. Can you like give me the 5-sentence take on that?
Yeah, it's basically a currently sort of like growing and evolving experiment to see how it would work for a music streaming platform to be cooperatively owned by the staff that run it, the mm-hmm. artists, the labels, and also the listeners. It's like a pretty interesting concept.
So it's the German version of Tidal. Is what you're saying. I'm just kidding.
Okay. Jason Aldean owns it?
No,
that's
no.
wild. But what is the interface like? Like, is it more like a Bandcamp or is it more like a Spotify Apple Music?
It's more of like a, you know, a more like a Spotify Apple Music type streaming thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting to, I wouldn't say that I do a lot of listening on it. There's mm-hmm. like three artists on it that I've listened to sometimes, but I think it's just interesting to experiment and look around at those like
new forms.
Yeah, new forms or people who are trying to create something different. Well, I wouldn't say that I do like a lot of listening on it, but I think it's a pretty interesting experiment. Oh,
can I have one detail?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's important also to point to another piece that you wrote last mm-hmm. year, which is called The Secret Lives of Playlists. Mm-hmm. So when Liz is talking about being on Spotify for work, in the sense we all are kind of on Spotify, at least in part for work, but the work that you're doing are these really deep dives, sort of almost like a forensic dig on how playlists get made, where the money is behind them, what the back channel conversations are. So we're going to point people to that as well. And that is on Cash Music?
Yeah, it's on Watt, which is a publication that's run by Cash Music, which is a nonprofit that gives artists tools to distribute their music and sort of have more control over their careers. So yeah, that's definitely a lot of why I end up spending so much time on Spotify. And I'm currently doing some more investigations into different playlists related topics. So I think that's why I've spent a lot of time on it recently too. Something that I've realized recently is that I still open my iTunes just as much as I open Spotify too,
mm-hmm.
because since I also am a music writer, you know, like you said, get a lot of album sent to me, and my experience of listening to music on my computer, I think, is like probably a lot different than other people's, and probably everyone at this table is different because we get a lot of albums sent to us for free and stuff like that. So
I want to say, sort of piggybacking off of that, but yeah, I'll say a lot of music listening I realized in the last year, because I get so much music ahead of time, that is the form that it takes.
Flex.
But seriously, like, I remember like getting an album like 30 Minutes Before It Came Out and sort of listened to that a bunch and was just like, oh, this came out, and just sort of forgot about it. But generally, most of my music listening happens at this point. I use Apple Music. I use Spotify a lot just for research purposes, but I don't pay for it. I sort of take some enjoyment of getting the ads, just because the ad infrastructure of Spotify is something I find very interesting and not a lot of people talk about, because their ads are very like localized and very hyper specific, and in a way that is very similar to like Facebook or Google ads, not as sophisticated. So I like using Spotify on the free version just to kind of get a sense of what that looks like. But I don't really use Spotify. Like, if you were to come to my work desk, you'd be like, what am I listening to? I'm mostly going through like SoundCloud, trying to find mixes, a lot of like Rinse FM lately. And then I also use Apple Music, and when I use Apple Music, it's mostly a mix of songs that I bought, mixtapes that I've downloaded, and then like maybe like one or two that's like going back through like old mix, like old albums or just things. So like Cash Money record, for some reason this morning I was like, really want to listen to Cash Money, but none of the good albums I want are on streaming services. So I wanted to listen to BG, can't listen to BG's actual Cash Money like discography on any streaming service. So it's like, okay.
Is that true?
Yeah, no. If you want to find like the actual good BG album from the 90s, they don't exist on streaming.
We should listen to a BG song.
Yeah. I would love to.
David. Yeah.
Some from Jopper City in the Ghetto?
Yes. Yes.
Let's listen to Cash Money's Army.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to listen to Cash Money's an Army, which is apparently a podcast exclusive because apparently it's not on any streaming service. So enjoy the 30 seconds that you're about to hear of this.
Yeah. I'm going to come like this. Money making is my thing because I'm trying to be rich, trying to put away meals. That's why I'm in the studio on my dropping rap after rap like you sell key after key. Backed up by the best friends, dropping beat after beat. My click is the high ball, best believe we so high. And dangerous if we in beef, we'll clear the whole lot. No fading us at all, cause we roll too deep. With AKs off safety, knocking it off their feet. I go by the name the BG. I ride on Coleman, the 98 Lexi S3. I'm busting long with a baby on the V3. And all these know my dog will do the same for me. We family, Cash Money is a homie, a niven. If you ever try to harm it, it ain't grieving. Don't say hate me, cause I'll leave you stale. Like dress up real good, and you will never get well. Cash Money is a homie, a niven. So if you ever try to harm it, it ain't grieving. Cash Money is a homie, a niven. So if you ever try to harm it, it ain't grieving. I got a path that you don't wanna cross. But if you do decide to cross, your weed get knocked off. I play raw, cause it's a dirty game, a dirty world. I play raw and do my thing. The world ain't nothing changed. We still floss in the best of rides. I ain't got a name, you know what it is on 20th ties. I know I'm tired of these trying to get me killed. I'm tired of these stanky hoes smiling in my grill. Just too real, and I'm in a battlefield trying to get my meals. It ain't no secret, I got skills to pay the bills.
You gotta tune into Popcast to hear the deep cuts.
Seriously?
No, I mean, like, it's honestly annoying that I had to do this. Like, I wanted to listen to some like old Wiz Khalifa mixtapes and realize, oh, I have to like find these MP3s. This is dumb.
But they must be in deep debt, Biff, right?
Well, yeah, but like, I have them on my computer, right, but like, if I just my phone, I'm like,
yeah, I don't tag my MP3s very well, so a lot of stuff just gone.
Oh,
okay. So David, so when you go down those wormholes, sometimes streaming is not satisfying.
No, it isn't.
And that's sort of a persistent problem with streaming, is the promise of a universal jukebox, but it doesn't actually end up paying off.
Same thing with a lot of, you know, independent underground, like punk bands. Yeah. You're not going to find on streaming services, except maybe, you know, Bandcamp. A lot of independent art and underground artists will have their stuff.
How much
Bandcamp.
Of that do you think is attributable to artists withholding themselves from those services, or is it streaming services' lack of interest in those artists?
I think it's both of a combination of artists wanting their music to be on a platform that works for them, and Bandcamp just makes more sense. If you make a tape and you're putting it online, you want to put it online somewhere where people can both listen to it and buy the tape.
Right.
Bandcamp. And then also probably a good number of artists who either don't know how to get their music onto streaming services, but then plenty who just don't care because it's not really for them.
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that like most of the music that is available on streaming services is coming in batches, right? Because the services have deals with
labels,
the labels, the publishers, or you can get an independent distributor like a TuneCore or whatever that you pay a flat fee to, and they'll have your music put onto a streaming service. But basically there's some middleman. So for acts that don't have those business relationships in general or never did, it's unlikely that their music would end up on the service. But I think that brings us to the sort of overarching conversation. And Liz, I think something that runs through all of your pieces, and the question is sort of like, what kind of music listener are you? And the answer is that most people, maybe not most podcast listeners, but most people are not the kind of music listeners that we are. And everything they could ever want is in the 30 million songs that's on Spotify.
And the sort of corollary to that is I was trying to identify any time I have ever listened to a playlist from top to bottom.
By choice.
By choice, where I said I'm starting with song one and I'm going through song 40.
More Life Doesn't Count.
I'm told it does.
Aubrey
told me it does.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know that I've ever voluntarily done that.
Right,
and I actually wonder, has anybody at this table actually done that?
I'd say I've done that. I used to do that honestly a lot last year when I got really into like some particular like trance and deep and like progressive house Spotify playlist.
So for like a genre that you're not very as familiar
specific.
With.
Well, it's not that I'm not familiar with it, just that like those particular genres aren't very album oriented. So it's hard to find like an album of like Tiësto, of like old school Tiësto. I mean, he has old school albums that I listen to, but like finding like the more contemporary versions of that or stuff like Above and Beyond, like I can't I mean, I listen to the radio. I mean, they have radio shows. They have all this stuff I can listen to. But it's like playlists like that are kind of actually good discovery mechanism because, again, electronic music, as I think I've talked about maybe a couple years ago, is pretty bad about in terms of music coverage is pretty poor.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to find places that write about progressive house.
Right.
Maybe the podcast one day might want to do something about that.
Let's do it. Let's commit in 2018 to doing a progressive house podcast. Okay,
it's David, it's on you.
Yeah, David, you'll come back.
I'll try. I'll read.
Wait,
up a little
if
bit.
You're not gonna come, then who's gonna? It's gonna be me just listening.
I'll find you. I'll find
it's
you some people.
It's literally gonna be an IG live video of me clicking around and finding.
That'll be what it is. That'll be what it is.
Joe, that's our new video series.
All right, I'm in.
That's our new video series.
I'll film it.
So, okay, Liz, do you ever do that outside of a work context? I mean, purely for a, like,
as
I'm
a music
I'm,
fan.
Yes, like I'm interested in such and such context.
I don't think so. I'm trying to think of, I mean, it doesn't seem like beyond the realm of possibility that that would happen, but I can't think of like a specific example.
Because we are all people who define ourselves in part
active.
By our active listening listeners. And our taste in music and our ability to draw connections between artists and genres in our own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And a playlist is for somebody who just wants it served to them.
Right.
Yeah. I'm thinking actually, you know, a situation in which I could totally see myself clicking on it, listening it, is if an artist that I really liked or a label that I really liked said, well, we made this playlist of, you know, everything that we put out this season, or an artist said, oh, this is everything that I've been listening to, I'd probably look at it and be like, oh, I wish this wasn't on Spotify, but I'd click it and listen to it anyway, just because it's something that I'd be really interested
in. Sort of like the old label samplers from the early 90s.
Yeah.
Like something like that could, I think, be effective as a playlist. But also a thing in your piece that you talk about is sort of this kind of conflation of like mood and genre.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm looking on the Spotify homepage right now and, under the Keep Your Cool rubric, right next to Wild Country with Devin Dawson on the cover, who is not as good as you've been told he is Pumping Iron, as if those are somehow similar frameworks. Like, I don't know, do I want to listen to Wild Country today or do I want to pump iron?
Well, they're similar in the sense that that's what a lot of people are trying to do when they pull up Spotify, is play something while I'm making dinner, play something while I'm working out, play something. They just don't want to have to worry about it. And I think that's the customer that's being served by these corporations that offends your sensibilities, because you've dedicated, Liz, you've dedicated your life to not being that person.
Yeah. But I just think before Spotify and before this environment, did people really sit around and think, I wish I had a cooking playlist right now? I think they're like, I wish I had music to listen to, but I feel like
you're saying, are they creating the need themselves, or are they filling?
I feel
a
like
need that
no,
already existed.
Yeah,
was it or was it just radio?
Yeah, I think
like that's like my ultimate question when I was thinking about these ideas. Where I was like, is this basically the splintering or the kind of like microization of what we've already had, which are like 30 radio stations in every city?
Mm-hmm.
And like, no, it's not a cooking playlist, but it is Light FM.
Mm-hmm.
And is it the same thing?
I think it is. And you can see the progression pretty clearly from radio to Pandora, which was, you know, an early streaming service that you used by either picking an artist or a mood. And then it just played you song. You didn't get to pick them. Now we cut what we call on-demand streaming is what most of us are used to. But Pandora, you know, it would just feed you songs that it thought you would like or that it thought fit your mood.
Literally never used Pandora once in my life.
I'm going to say one of the things that I always think that sometimes people forget about for these mood playlists is that sometimes, like, so like Pumping Iron, you could easily imagine that there are gyms across America, even across the world, that instead of just trying to figure out what radio station do we want to play that's just always on, we can just put on the Pumping Iron playlist and just let it kind of go through.
And to be fair, I actually am looking at the Pumping Iron playlist right now. It's very intense. We're going to listen to one song off the Pumping Iron playlist. We're going to listen to Shinedown's Sound of Madness.
Wow. Taking it way back.
Yeah.
Under attack, always coming in last, bringing up the bass. No one owes you anything, I think. You need a shotgun blast, a kick in the ass. So paranoid, watch your back. Oh my, here we go, another loose cannon gone bipolar.
And that's a soft song on this playlist. There's a lot of Volbeat. There's a lot happening on this playlist. There's also weirdly a refused.
Do you feel the masculine energy?
I
come
do. There's also weirdly a refused record
from which just album? The, Shape of Punk to Come.
The EP. No, the yeah. off the EPs.
Wow.
Let's look.
Another one is. Have you guys seen the cover for Beast Mode?
Is that another workout playlist?
Oh, yeah, that's another one, the big playlist. Like, yeah.
But I think,
playlist.
David, I think your point is important, which is it's true. Like, law offices, lobbies, you know, want a mood playlist. Coffee shops.
Dentist office. I think of, like, dentist. Yeah, I think dentist office a lot because when I was a kid, the dentist office just played soft jazz, and it was...
The radio.
Yeah, and now I think they just play, like, I think my dentist plays, like, the Sirius XM soft jazz, but if they turn this into a Spotify soft jazz, I really wouldn't care.
What if it was the Spotify clout playlist, the cloud goggle playlist?
I'd be a little tripped out hearing little Xanax while going under. It'd be a little trippy.
Xans won't make you.
Yeah. Also, sorry, little Xan. Yeah. Columbia, I'm sorry.
I think, you know, it's definitely true that, you know, like, Pandora basically is serving the similar function as radio, but it's important to think of the larger implications that a platform like Spotify is both how artists are expected to digitally distribute their music and make money off of it, and also serving the function of prioritizing these mood and genre playlists. And it's, you know, this like interactive platform. It's not just Pandora. It's so much more than that. And it's consolidated so many different types of purposes into this one platform and so much power.
And also a thing that you talk about briefly in your piece, the idea of ultimately Spotify hoping to usurp the role of the label, in essence. I was thinking a lot about that because you have right now some ostensibly independent artists who basically go straight to streaming platform, Chance. You know, they're independent notionally, but obviously there are million-dollar corporate relationships that are happening, and in that case, Apple is trying to take some of the role of the record label, and I assume Spotify. Although Spotify has sort of avoided some of the more obvious things.
Well, Spotify is partially owned by
labels.
Yeah, yes. That's the thing. Like, Spotify is like has been invested by all three major labels, and I think even for about almost 10 years, I think it was like 2009 mm-hmm. that was like revealed, I think, in The Guardian. So that's like definitely one of the reasons why playlists are so heavily skewered towards major label music, mm-hmm. which I think is one of the things that Liz was sort of getting at. I think one of the reasons that I've been like in the last year, I've been so entertained in Spotify is not simply just because of playlists. Like, playlists are just a way that people consume music. That's one thing. But it's sort of the concerted push to say streaming is going to be the end-all be-all of music consumption.
The default practice.
Yeah, and then it's sort of like if you take that one step further, you sort of go like, if that is the end-all be-all of music consumption, what does that sort of mean? It sort of means that if you're an up-and-coming artist, where do you want to put your music? It's like you want to put it on one of these streaming services. Like, one of the things that I thought was really interesting last year was that the Complex Show Everyday Struggle had DJ Academics and Carl Cherry, who...
Carl Cherry is an employee of Apple Music.
Yeah, he's the head of, like, I think, a curation at Apple Music for playlists. And one of the questions that DJ Academics asked, they're like, that was really good, actually. I'm giving credit to Academics.
Shouts to Academics.
No, let's not do that. But, like, just give him a little credit. It was that he asked, did you guys kill the mixtape? Service. Did you kill Dat Pip live mixtapes? And Carl Cherry was kind of like ducked and dodged it, but like he was kind of like Academic was kind of right that because of these streaming platforms, they came in and essentially was like for a rapper, not like even a small time rapper, it's like, why would you put your tape on Dat Pip or a live mixtape if you can put it on Apple Music or Spotify and actually get money for the stream you get?
Although, to be fair, I think Dat Pip was paying for mixtape exclusives for a long time.
Only at a certain level.
Only at a certain level.
No,
yeah.
Of course. I understand. Yeah, yeah. I mean, no major artist would do it, but it's not that there's no money.
No, yeah, there was money changing hands, but yeah. I guess it's sort of like from like almost like from the top to the bottom level, where it's like if you're an up-and-coming act, it's like, well, maybe I should figure out. Like a lot of like small-time rappers I follow are now starting to get much more savvy about getting their music on streaming platforms.
Yeah.
Where 5 years ago, it would have been straight to YouTube or straight to Dat Pip or straight to live mixtapes.
But that's because there are these services like a TuneCore, in which you just, they play the role of a distributor and you just pay a little bit of money and then they get them on streaming services as long as all your legal stuff is in order.
Yeah.
Liz, do you find sort of that access to a thing like TuneCore to be in any way remediating to the bigger issue at hand?
I don't think so, because it's ultimately creating value for this company that, like, in all ways wants to drive down how much artists are getting paid for their work.
Right.
I don't, and just to like backtrack for a second, like I don't really like buy the idea that people want playlists. I think that Spotify wants people to want playlists.
Why?
Because Spotify's value, and I write about this a lot in my article, it's like value is really tied up and it's in its music discovery products and its tools and its Rap Caviars and Discover Weeklies.
Curation.
And, you know, like to them, like people come to Spotify because it like knows their tastes and it'll show them your daily mix and release radar and stuff. And they value that so much more than they value actually compensating the creators of music who are creating value on their platform. So to me, it's like, it's just this whole backward system. Like musicians are absolutely what's creating value for this platform and should be fairly compensated. But to them, like they think that these playlists that they create and these tools and algorithms that they've created are like what is adding the most value.
But also isn't the playlist in essence kind of a trick? Because many people listen to music in the way that we don't, which is to say they press play on something. Could be an album, could be the radio, could be a playlist, and they walk away. And they let it go. And Spotify doesn't know if you're an active consumer of this song or a passive consumer of the song, just in the same way radio doesn't know. It just knows if it's on or if it's off. So isn't, in essence, the idea of playlisting to kind of capture every potentiality of passive listening? Because it's interesting because I understand that the ostensible value proposition of a Spotify playlist is to sell someone on discovery. But I think the real value proposition of a playlist, and I mean not just Spotify, but in general, is to trick you into not pressing stop.
And you just don't have to worry. In a similar way to radio, everything's going to be of a certain quality. Whereas if you're on SoundCloud, you could listen to a song that you love, and then four songs from there, you're listening to a song that sounds like it was recorded like in a tin can, and you have to shut it off.
Do not talk about Smoke Perp like that. That
but
is,
you know,
rude.
But you know, the there's a certain level of production. There's an aesthetic.
Through line.
Yeah, and consistency in a radio or a Spotify place that allows you to leave it on and not worry about
it. And this
it.
Is where the idea of Spotify Core kind of came, where it's basically like these songs, which I guess notionally existed before 3 years
ago. Now
they're
just all put in one place.
Yeah, and I think there are now more artists trying to make songs like this.
And it's a kind of music that nobody would ever turn off. It doesn't. It's not going to hurt your ears.
Well,
it's,
I would try.
Right, but you know what I mean? Like a passive listener may
But it
not.
Is Muzak-y. It's the most, like when you liken it to Muzak, it's the most Muzak-y thing, at least to me, it feels like Muzak.
And I feel like if this concept of lean back listening existed before streaming, it definitely existed, but I feel like Spotify exacerbates this sort of listening in a way that is sort of unprecedented.
So my question for you, I guess, Liz, is, you know, you write in your piece that you say the danger Spotify poses to the music industry and to music itself. Like, so is that danger that a class of artists who doesn't stream well could disappear? Is that one of the risks?
Yeah, for sure.
So then I guess how does Spotify and streaming differ from the major label system and radio, in which, you know, it, say in the 80s or the 90s, you know, after the rise of indie or punk or whatever, you know, there are acts that were able to find an alternate model, right? They never participated in the major label system. They were never going to get played on the radio, but they found their own means of distribution, and then they make money touring and et cetera. Doesn't streaming help along that process if you can do it in a place like SoundCloud or Bandcamp, and you can just, can't you just not play the Spotify game and continue your career outside of the mainstream?
Oh, sorry, Liz, can I jump in?
Totally, go for
it. I'm going to say the issue for that, at least of smaller artists, is that for labels in particular, they have to play the game at this point. Is if you're like a small independent label and you want to promote your act, you can not put your music on Spotify or any other major services, but you're significantly hamstringing their potential audience. You just kind of know that. And one of the other things is sort of, and so because of that, you get this sort of weird effect where you can follow seemingly independent artists who will still like saying really nice things about Spotify, even though if you were to talk to them realistically, they wouldn't have really anything nice things to say, because it's not like because the service isn't really helping them, but they have to promote it. It's sort of like a weird conversation I've had a lot the last like couple months, is where people come to me and they're like, oh, I want to talk about this stuff, but I don't want to say it in public because I represent artists and have people's careers and livelihood, like from their perspective, the company perspective, just from the actual art perspective, where it's like, we can't risk upsetting the apple cart of this because they see the long-term.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, they see the long-term game that Spotify isn't going away anytime soon. Apple Music not going away anytime soon. Even Amazon, which is something we're not even mentioned, but Amazon is not going away anytime soon. And it's sort of like, because of that, a lot of these people who have vested careers in music do not want to upset what could essentially take over the music industry.
But I guess I'm just skeptical that these people were ever selling a lot of music to begin with. Like if their CDs were never in places where people bought music at the peak of CDs, you know, Best Buy, Barnes & Noble,
Tower Records,
you couldn't find the music there. It was never going to get played on the radio. There was no made label system that was going to really take them in. So I guess, aren't more people listening to those bands now, not fewer?
Well, I feel like we're in this moment where we have this system that is unquestionably like the new center of power in music, and it's serving the same interests that the mainstream music industry has always served: deals with major labels, quotas, meetings, phone calls, spreadsheets, completely like serving similar interests to what commercial radio would have serviced. But it's also the system where all independent artists are being treated as if they're like entirely beholden to it, where in the past, you know, there were alternatives. I feel like it's an unprecedented like level of artists of all sizes and scales being expected to like play this game, mm-hmm. because their fans will be like, oh, is your album on Spotify?
Right.
And because there's also people paying for Spotify assuming that
certain things will be on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things will be on there. And also assuming that artists are like getting paid for it in some
way.
And
instead, good for the artists.
Yeah. Why do people pay for Spotify subscriptions? I mean, yes, one reason because they don't want to listen to ads, but also because I think there's a lot of people who pay for Spotify because they think that it's the more ethical thing to do than to just download music illegally. But if all we're getting is a company that is losing money all the time and is concerned with the bottom line to such an extent that it's constantly finding new ways to undercut artists and to lower the amount of royalties that it has to pay artists, or just not paying them at all, as we've seen through like the multiple lawsuits. And, you know, like we were talking about before, there's also proof that Spotify has been hiring lobbyists to sort of like advocate for royalty rates to go down in DC. And just
because basically that's Spotify's primary cost, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Paying royalties. Like, I don't know what the percentages would be, but I've got to assume that the bulk of the money that they have to put out in the world,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's for servers. Like, maybe it's for server space, but it's most likely it's royalties.
It's all, it's like licenses. Royalties.
I don't have the figures in front of me, but, you know, I have talked to artists and managers who say that the problem isn't that Spotify isn't paying enough. They're paying out a lot of money. Annually, they pay out a lot of money.
Right.
It's just that there are many actors in between the streaming service and the artist
musician,
that touch the money before it makes its way to the artist and or the songwriter. You know, whether that's the labels that are taking a huge chunk, or, you know, publishers or people who, you know, songwriters before you get to the artist who performed the song, like there's a lot of money out there. It's just doesn't always trickle down to the artist.
I was thinking about the idea of Spotify kind of usurping the role of the record label. But one thing that Spotify does not do, at least not to my knowledge, that a label would do is album advances, tour support, like kind of the bread and butter of getting off the ground as a low level musician. Like, even if the album advance is $10,000 and the tour support is $10,000, you know, it's like it doesn't have to be hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's not something that I don't think that Spotify engages in any way. I feel like when Apple Music does like exclusive premieres, like they're not doing that. But if you're sliding a famous person $500,000, it's sort of a default.
Yeah, Apple has paid for tour documentaries, for music videos, sort of thing. The way I think they sort of get around that is they try to do it editorially, right? Like they all have these programs. Spotify has a secret genius thing where they highlight songwriters or, you know, producers that people don't know. Apple has its like spotlight program where they sort of pick a young artist. I don't know that there's a check involved in that. David, correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know if it's a
sort of editorial support. And that's homepage, it's playlist placement, it's that sort of thing. And that's where they're...
But is that different than iHeartRadio placement.
Last year, I spent a lot of time reading of just sort of about the history of radio and just a lot about, it was more or less payola. I just came up with the topic of payola. And one of the reasons was just because major label, it was just because it became this insane major label system where like they just kept paying money out to promoters that they just realized we can't keep doing this and they just never stopped doing it. And, but the thing that was interesting and why I kept thinking about it in relation to Spotify was just because Spotify's most of the music, I think I said earlier, is that most of the music on playlists is just by the three major labels. Those are like, that's usually where the music comes from. So when Joe was sort of mentioning earlier all of the middlemen and all the hands that are grabbing at music, that the issue that ends up being for like a smaller independent artist is that these are people that might have better contracts than ones that work at a major label, but they're all taking from the same pot of money, essentially. So all those middlemen and hands that are taking it from major labels effectively are taking it from everyone. And I guess that's sort of the issue that I think that Liz was mentioning earlier is that Spotify, it sort of just puts everyone in the same bucket. And previously, if you were a truly independent artist, you could
pick your own bucket.
Yeah, you could step outside of it and you could try to make that work that way. But right now, because of how big Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube, YouTube's bigger than all of them, but like because of how big these platforms are, it's really hard to escape and outrun them. And that's a real struggle for independent artists. And I think a thing I was also thinking about recently was in the 2000s, there was a lot of fun around like mashups and sort of like more, or like think of MIAs, like early mixtapes, like that kind of fun outsider, essentially illegal music that could thrive in that old version of the internet. Right now,
it's not.
It doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist probably for like stylistic reasons. We move on from old genres, but also because, at the end of the year last year, Lil Wayne put out the Dedication 6. And when he put out the Dedication 6, my immediate thought was, this will never be on any streaming platform.
Because he's using beats that other people own that he's not paying for.
Yeah. And it's so when he, so I think it was a couple weeks ago, him and Drake put out a song that remixed Family Feud, Jay-Z's song from 444. And I really like that song. It's like a really great old school Wayne Drake song. I will only have that on YouTube at the moment. I would love if that was on any streaming service.
It's on YouTube.
It's only on YouTube.
Yeah.
But it's not on Spotify.
And I think, honestly, it's interesting because that song, I think, would have picked up in a different way. It's a good freestyle over a beat for a song that everybody knew and loved, featuring Beyonce, Drake and Wayne reuniting, and it barely made any waves, I think, because nobody could listen to it.
We should listen to it.
Young Angel and Young Lion. Back together.
Young angel, young lion. More life, no dying. Yeah. Alright, I got it. Yeah. Super Bowl goals. I'm at the crib of Puff. He got Kaepernick on the phone. He in a whole different mode. Angel head, 2 a.m. for being whole. Just to show him how I treat the city like my humble abode. Hey, tell me if TD Bank is approving loans. I'm thinking of paying Wayne with Universal O's. My spend a lifetime going platinum and gold. He should own half of the label, get out of control. Somebody get Larry Jackson on the phone. I need some ownership if we press and go. Cause business is booming on behalf of me. I need a bite out of the apple like Adam and Eve. We gon' have to break the Billy curse. I need my paper long like a Millie verse, or too long like a sentence from a Philly judge. Cause the point in all the beefing when we really blood. Nobody wins when a family feuds.
So that song's not on Spotify. Will never be on Spotify unless licensing rules change.
Or maybe Jay will give them a grant to put it on
a Tidal.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
Soon to be Tidal exclusive.
Also, Wayne's legal situation, to be fair, probably is holding a lot of that back.
That is totally fair. So maybe Baby is going to start a Tidal competitor that's only going to feature Lil Wayne Effluvia.
Here for it.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably.
I would say Jacquees might be on that. So that'd be good. Jacquees is great.
To the point we were talking about earlier, probably to me the most frustrating thing about the Spotify homepage is obviously there's concern about discovery, and like the entire proposition of this is discovery, but the level of how these things are condensed make it fundamentally impossible to discover. It's almost like I couldn't even imagine. I have to click at least 3 times before I found a thing that maybe was a thing I didn't know. Maybe. And I say that even if I was a casual listener, I would probably feel the same way. And so I think the work that they're doing that's complicating royalty payment, you know, that's financially challenging, that's one category. But the idea that all music can basically fit in like a 5-inch by 12-inch rectangle that scrolls That's actually, to me, way more troubling. That's what I struggle with.
I feel like that speaks to this thing that I have been thinking about a lot, which is that it's not even so much like the problem that they prioritize like their own content and their major label content, and that's on the front page, but that in essence, that makes it harder to find like all of the other stuff, I think. And I think that's like another way that they consolidate power is like by one, yes, prioritizing their other stuff, but yeah, making everything else just like harder to find and, you know, making like tracks and albums harder to find than playlists and, you know, sort of like obscuring the actual albums. And
I find it extremely disorienting when I go into an artist's feed on Spotify and I cannot identify the albums from the same, you know, like.
Interface is a whole other problem. They all have this problem. Searching is hard. Finding an album is hard. Finding a song, like say, you know, if you just hear a song on the radio or in a store and you want to type it in to figure out what it is, and you hear a phrase from it, you're never going to find it, which is, you know,
unless it's Money Moves.
Well,
there are like Busbreak, but
that was my theory about Money Moves, which is that they put it in the totally song title
so you could
find it easier.
And didn't you find like one or two other songs that had done a similar thing?
Yes, and there are fake songs on Spotify that are phrases of songs that you might think. For instance, EXO Tour Life, there you can find songs on there called All My Friends Are Dead because people just assume that that's what the song's called, and they get in those free streams.
Those
accidental clicks.
Yeah, to be fair, that's a kind of a sneaky game that people played on YouTube back in the day, and on iTunes back
in the
day.
And also on MP3. That's a kind of
sneaky old school way of doing it.
There's an interesting point, though, I thought of while Liz and John, you were talking about what is available on this home screen. And it reminded me of Jimmy Iovine's sort of idea. When he talks about streaming, he works at Apple Music, but he basically compares it to video streaming and says, like, you know, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, they all have their own content and they have brands and they have aesthetics, and music streaming hasn't gotten there. You know, they have millions, they spend billions of dollars every year making their own content. And it's possible that streaming will get to a point like that. And there will be different companies that have different, you know, they'll have different catalogs. Basically now all the catalogs across the board are the same. You don't really need a Tidal, a Spotify, an Apple Music, and a SoundCloud subscription, because the overlap is very strong.
Yeah.
Or is like almost 100%.
98 to 90.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think streaming is still relatively new. I mean, its dominance in the music industry is only 2 years old, essentially. So it's possible that those will develop, and there'll be streaming services that are smaller but can sustain a sort of unified aesthetic of things that aren't just the same major label, dancey, whatever's hot tracks.
We've definitely seen a couple of different examples of Spotify starting to get into the game of creating its own content, which is stuff along the lines of I'm With the Band, which was their playlist of artists who were affected by the travel ban, pairing up with other artists to make music and then doing like video content, sort of like talking about like their experiences and their process. And like that was, you know, an example of like some Spotify original content, video and audio that they created. And then they also, you know, drove that to the homepage a lot, did Subway ads around it and stuff like that.
But again, it's more editorial than sort of them just empowering artists to create. Like if they were to write a big check for
a Taylor Swift album.
But I'm saying even on a smaller scale.
Then I guess there's also, you know, another example is like the, you know, David probably could talk to this more than me, but the Epidemic Sound, like fake artist thing where they're actually paying for certain tracks to like pad out.
Yeah. To populate their mood playlist.
So there's definitely examples of them starting to like inch towards. And I think that editorial like should be considered in this conversation of them making their own content, because it's like maybe you'll go to Spotify and homepage and they'll push their own editorial content like way more than they will music or something like that. And I'm pretty sure that
That happens on Rap Caviar, doesn't it? Don't they do video interviews?
And
they have a tour.
I feel like that's already sort of happened.
Yeah, that connection makes sense to me because, I mean, yeah, like the mass. So, like, I wrote a few stories about this last year where there, unfortunately, in the United States, a number of mass shootings that happened last year. And when you would go to the Spotify homepage, you would see these playlists that were essentially, like, in memory of those who lost their lives. And it was really jarring to go to again, a app that essentially exists just for music. Like, I conceive of it as just like, this is where I can get an access to all of recorded music. And then if for to remind me.
It's like trying to tell you how to feel.
Yeah. And that is kind of the underlying principle of mood playlists and even those like workout playlists we were talking about earlier. But it felt kind of different to sort of bring up national tragedy, to bring up that, hey, there was a massive shooting at a country music festival. And then the four major country playlists made reference to that.
And but like, how is that? But I guess the thing that we are ultimately talking about is for something like Spotify, which is basically trying to capture, if we think of playlist listening as just the fight for the first click play, the first play click, if it's going to take national tragedy and make you press play, how is that any different from Pumping Iron? How is that any different? Like, I'm looking on the main page right now, and just one row across, four things as different kinds of options, as like meta categories: rock, party, know what that is, sleep, Christian, all given equal bandwidth. And I think, why not? Like, if in a weird way, I'm surprised they don't do more things like that.
I think I don't disagree with that. I guess it's sort of more.
I don't want to have to write about those things.
Yeah. But it's like, I guess it's a little just jarring as just sort of a music fan, because I guess like, so I think of it like this. So like when there were like, a couple years ago, when there were a lot of protests of Black Lives Matter, if you turned on a rap station, there was sort of a thing where like people would call in to talk about their community and what was happening. And there was a very real sense of like, something is happening in my city, in my community, and I'm reaching out to the media and the local media to try to talk about it. But when I go to Spotify, and if there was to say, I don't want like to be like the Michael Brown shooting, if that were to happen, if there was a Spotify playlist about that, that were just to bring up songs like Kendrick Lamar and other sort of like radical, like artists that we might think of like as radical or being like very like socially aware, if that playlist was to be the first thing I saw on Spotify, I wouldn't feel the same kind of community and sense of like, hey, something is happening around me and I'm now reacting to it. It'd be like, I feel like my emotions are being kind of exploited.
But also, don't you think there's got to be a woke rap Spotify?
Oh, of course. I think the reason, the difference in the two examples you just gave, the radio versus the Spotify playlist, is that these streaming services haven't turned into social networks, really. Apple Music just started to do it where you can follow your friends and see their recommendations and see what they're listening to. And Spotify has that a little bit, but they've resisted becoming social networks.
They've actually gone back on it. So like, you used to be able to message people within Spotify, and they've gotten rid of that. And like, the browse page just have like user-generated playlists, and they've gone back from that.
But I think then, on the other hand, if you look at something like Bandcamp, like, there is a community there, and they have a strong editorial side where they recommend things, and you can get people's playlists, people's picks, like you might at a record store. You would walk in and you would see, you know, their top five picks at an independent record store. Like, they sort of foster more of that community feeling.
This is like reminding me of just some really big picture stuff that I always think about with Spotify, is that ultimately, Spotify is a huge corporation that is just building its own brand at the expense of completely changing how people express themselves and also how they like form community around music. And I feel like, you know, Spotify is a pretty like, it's not a platform that drives community or anything like that.
No, it's not designed for that.
No.
Yeah. So for it to take up so much space in how people interact around music, I think has effects on the potential for music to be a thing that continues. And community is like, you know, it's a huge part of music.
Yeah, I wonder, mm-hmm. I don't know the answer, but like, what percentage of playlist listening on Spotify is user-generated playlists versus the playlists that they create? David?
Going to say, that varies a lot artist to artist. I've been told, like, it's kind of funny because I've been told this so many times where it's like, Spotify wants it to be through their playlist. They want that. That's what they will tell labels and people, being like, hey, your artist is doing well by search, but we'd much rather they do well on our playlist. And it's sort of like, but then the obvious artist response is, but fans are looking for my work. That's good. That's, in fact, better than them finding it through a playlist. But again, for Spotify, they much rather go through the playlist, which is sort of like what Liz pointed out in one of her stories last year, was that when you search for an artist, the first thing you see is their Spotify-created playlist. It isn't even their actual music.
Although, to be fair, many albums are bad. So
it is true.
I would like to end on a mildly optimistic note, very mild, and with a punchline. Every now and again, I do actually discover an artist on Spotify. It has not never happened. I would say it doesn't happen a lot, but it has not never happened. So I'd like to go out with a song by an artist I discovered on Spotify.
How did you discover it?
It was, if I'm not mistaken, it was the last song on the New Music Friday playlist.
You got to the last one?
Well, no, I tend to look for
things, names, you don't recognize.
Things I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Like things I'm uncertain of. Like mm-hmm. I don't need to hear the 30 things I already have heard, but mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, what is this thing? Just like that thing we listened to earlier in the mm-hmm. in the show. So we're going to listen to Angelica Garcia. Angelica Garcia is a young sort of like blues rock soul singer who had a song called Orange Flower, which was her first single that I could find apart from like a couple of YouTube bluesies. And it was the last song on the Spotify New Music playlist, Friday playlist. I liked it a lot. And then I found out she was signed to Warner Brothers because of course she signed to Warner Brothers.
Yep.
But that said, it hasn't helped her career at all because she's still super unpopular. But I ride. I ride for Angelica. I stand.
I like it.
I stand for Angelica Garcia, Spotify or no, whatever format, Bandcamp, SoundCloud, wherever it ends up, it's good. So here's Orange Flower by Angelica Garcia.
He gave me an orange flower. What in the hell does that mean? Am I halfway to red and halfway to yellow? Am I his mother or his lover or someone in the middle? Oh.
That's our show this week. Thank you to my guests, David Turner, Liz Pelly, Joe Coscarelli. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Unfortunately, we do not have a passive listening option where you can listen to all of them.
But make a playlist.
Joe will make a playlist. We will share the link.
Can shuffle.
You can listen to the podcast anywhere you get music or audio content, which I believe also includes Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio app, other podcast things. Go chase it down, but listen to it on the New York Times website because we have a cool interface.
Or bootleg it. Email me. I'll send you an MP3. I'll Dropbox it. For
absolutely,
you.
we'll get you a mega upload link. email us, whether about the upcoming Ashley Simpson podcast or with your frustrations about streaming services, which we can address in a subsequent episode at podcast@newyorktimes.com. Our producer is Pedro Rosado of Head Separate Media. We're back next week.